The Doug and Wolf Show.
The next 4 hours of your life will be outstanding wherever you are if you keep listening to The Doug and Wolf Show.
You're calling your shot.
I'm calling my shot on today's show.
Doug Franz, Ron Wolfley.
You know that's good radio.
Oh, yeah.
Doug and Wolf, 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
So the NFL Combine is starting. ASU is on fire. And in all of this importance, Wolf took another day off. So Josh Colemanter, former opening day starting pitcher for the Arizona Diamondbacks, is filling in for Ron Wolfley today as spring training mostly started across the valley this weekend. Did not start on Saturday because it's the one day this year that it rained. It chose opening day of spring training in the Cactus League. And Josh Colemanter, who if I'm not mistaken, you still haven't officially retired. Like, if anybody wants you, they can give you a call, right? Any GMs that are up listening right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I should take a Craigslist ad out or something like that.
How's life?
It's going well. Just getting back to Arizona, so it's kind of nice to.
What were you doing before? Did you go Michigan or did you go traveling? Or
traveling, yeah. Buddy and I did a trip to Egypt, so we spent a week over there.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, saw the pyramids and
wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of nice because I'm not quite adjusted, so I was wide awake this morning, ready to go.
So when did you get back?
Saturday night.
Oh my! Yeah. So I have never even other than like Caribbean islands. And then, of course, like Toronto and Alberta at some point, those two places in Canada. I've never left the country. So how many different countries have you been to? You don't have to sit and count.
I'd have
to
tally them up, but it's in double digits. So,
wow.
Yeah,
that's impressive.
Nice. Yeah, some of it baseball related, and then others just try. I have a buddy who just on a whim will say, like, hey, he's a school teacher. He had winter break. He had a week. He's like, let's go somewhere. All right, just tell me when and where. He sets the whole thing up, so it makes traveling quite easy.
What made Egypt, I would be fascinated by the pyramids, the Sphinx, stuff like that. But the rest of the culture I would be very, very nervous. Were you fine? Any travel issues?
No travel issues, but it's crazy. You go there and see it, and just everything that's happened in there, we were reading about it.
Yeah.
Tourism was way down, so it's actually easy to go see everything.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, other than seeing the pyramids and going down and seeing like Valley of the Kings and all the tombs and stuff like that, there's no reason to really go to Cairo. The city is just like a Mario Kart track with way too many people playing at the same time. There's no rules to driving. You just drive in a herd and you just honk at everyone to let them know where you're at because they don't follow the lanes, which is kind of crazy.
That trip, that would be low on the list. Is there somewhere you haven't been that it's pretty high on your bucket list to get to?
Yeah, I'd like to do like south of France.
Okay.
Try to do like Monaco, Nice, through that area. A little bit on the Caribbean or on the Mediterranean would be pretty high up there.
I want to do the Mediterranean cruise where I sample a bunch of different places and then decide, okay, this is where I want to focus like a week or something like that, but be able to use the cruise to figure out what are the best places.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Other than Barcelona, because everybody knows you've got – I haven't done it, but, I mean, everybody says you got to do that once.
Yeah.
So I don't need to sample.
Yeah, the Mediterranean would be fascinating because that's the coolest thing about going to Europe is it'd be like traveling states here if they were just completely different people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Without the like border restrictions or anything, you can just go train, plane, whatever. And, you know, you're right into another city and you don't have to worry about clearing customs every time or any of that. They all take, for the most part, the same money, all the countries on the euro. So Europe just makes it super easy to do all that.
I definitely want all of that, French Riviera, Spanish Riviera. And there's you could tell me anywhere in Italy and I'd say, okay, I want to do that.
Yeah, I did, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 days in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go back and do the same thing and see a whole nother part, or
you could
just do the same trip again and have a blast. Everybody that had ever been kind of told me the same thing. And yeah, once you go, you just pass that along, like just go somewhere. You'll enjoy it. You'll have a blast. It'll be your top couple trips that you'll probably ever go on.
Pretty good life from a guy from Homer, Michigan.
I mean, not bad. Yeah. When I tell some of my friends, like, hey, I was here that like, crossing the state border to Indiana might as well be international travel for some of the people there.
For those of you that have not listened before when Josh Colemanter has filled in for Wolf, my favorite Josh Colemanter story is still, and I'm how much time? I got about 45 seconds. It's still the most embarrassing moment, but a lot of you have heard this millions of times before me complain about my mother-in-law. You've heard it. I realize it's all true. Everything about the mother-in-law is true. But the second greatest example of how annoying the mother-in-law is, you'll have to buy me a beer sometime if you want to hear about the Senator McCain story and my mother-in-law. But it all happened in the exact same day where there's a famous event at the Franz household called the Euchre Tournament, which is actually coming up on Saturday. And Josh played in the Euchre Tournament one time, and then about 2 days later, the in-laws come to a spring training practice where Wolf and I are doing the show from out there, and Josh is doing PFP on a small bunt field, and all of a sudden my mother-in-law acts like she's Josh's best friend because she played cards with him, and she yells from our broadcast area, "Hi, Josh! Hi, Josh!" and starts waving at him in the middle of PFP. And he is, you know, as reasonably focused as Josh can be during PFP, which is not very much. He looks over and he kind of waves like, "What is this woman doing?" And it takes him a while to put it together who she even is. And then he looks right at me, and it wasn't an evil eye, but it was, did all this really just happen just now? And I just ducked my head and just kind of nodded, and I'm still embarrassed. I think I've apologized 9 times, but here's apology number 10. For that moment.
Yeah, well, the nice thing is, outside of Susan, she might have been the only one yelling during PFPs.
That's true. I mean, you know what? I'm glad I could compare my mother-in-law to Susan.
And now, it's time for your Arizona Sports Starting Five. You can't go to work without knowing these 5 huge stories. Here's Doug Franz and Ron Wolfley.
There's your PA announcer for the Phoenix Suns. He comes up at 10 o'clock today.
Alert, oh. Alert. We have a new mock draft. I repeat, we have a new mock draft.
Of course we do.
Number five
this morning is the latest Cardinals mock. I've been telling you about Javon Kinlaw for quite a while. On this mock on NFL.com, however, it goes 3 rounds. And the name to pay attention to is the one they threw out in the second round, which I think is impossible. Bradley Ane, if you've been watching Pac-12 football, you've seen this guy play for Utah. If he's really there at about pick number 40, that would be the most unbelievable steal to get Brown or Kinlaw, great defensive tackles, as the first pick, and then get an edge rusher to help Chandler Jones. Suddenly quarterbacks would actually fear playing the Cardinals for the first time in about 5 years.
Yeah, that'd be great. You have your quarterback. You could kind of protect him. Now you want to be able to rush the other team's quarterback. I mean, those are kind of the 3 building blocks.
Oh, yeah.
Just to take some pressure off Chandler Jones and let him do his thing.
Because right now it's Chandler versus the world on rushing the passer.
Number four
this morning, D-back spring training got underway.
You kind of forget how much you miss playing the actual game, the offseason, even though it feels short. It seems like a while till you play the game. And then you get in that first one, it's like, man, I miss this.
That is now new supermodel, if you haven't seen him, Robbie Ray, who struck out the side in the first inning, sounds like Robbie, and then walked 2 batters in the second inning and didn't make it the full inning, sounds like Robbie. And the question after listening to that, Josh, is, have you ever heard Robbie Ray lose his mind and take a bat to a locker and get angry at the world?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he might look that way sometimes when he has the beard going, but typically doesn't do that.
He's so subdued all the time.
Yeah, but that's kind of the outing and what you're to expect. He's going to strike out a lot of guys, but then there's going to be times where he's going to walk a lot of guys.
I'd love to see him lose his mind.
The dichotomy of Robbie Ray.
Number three,
how about this? A nice weekend in which a couple teams did really well. Tampa Bay's on fire until they went into Vegas. They lose, and then they turn around and lose to the Coyotes in a fantastic hockey game. And Bobby Hurley gets a 7-game winning streak going.
You love a team that you got to rip your heart out to beat them. And that's the kind of, you know, effort and what we're bringing to the court every game.
I admit, Josh, I was a little nervous because you had the big win Thursday night. And how many times when you're not a championship caliber team or you don't have that pedigree, do you have the big letdown? And they almost did, but still found a way to beat Oregon State.
Yeah, that's a good sign. And they've had that a couple times this year with big wins followed up by kind of a letdown mm-hmm. loss. But yeah, good. I mean, even just to eke out a win, show's probably taking steps forward and in the right direction.
Like I said, 7-game winning streak, and up next on the road to the Southern California schools over this weekend.
Number two.
wherever you stand in the DeAndre Ayton argument, you were proven right once again.
Yeah, that woke me up. I was like, okay, these dudes competing, they came to play. It shouldn't be like that to where somebody have to throw the first punch at me, but yeah, it be like that sometimes. And my team woke me up. Like always, Coach got on me. Coach Bryant got on me, and yeah, I answered.
So, number one, if you love DeAndre Ayton, 28 points, 19 rebounds in this game, 12 of 20 from the field, he was fantastic. So that means get off his back. Yet he just admitted, after the biggest question being his level of competition or competitive level, what does he do? He needed somebody to block his shot to wake him up. Non-competitive people, I don't understand.
Yeah, especially at this level. I mean, like, coaches will tell you, even from your early playing days, if you can't get up for the actual game, obviously practice is a little different, but if you're not ready to go every single game, there's kind of hard to motivate people that can't already do that.
Exactly.
Number one.
And the number one thing you need to know about this morning, for the first time, the Houston Astros scandal is not the number one story in baseball. The number one story in all of Major League Baseball is that our ace is a rodeo star. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Well, it's okay because he ropes right-handed, which shows that he's unbelievably talented. And I don't know if that counts in the great words of Yogi Berra of being amphibious, if you can use both of your hands. Yeah, that was a yogiism. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf live from the Auction Community Studios. Wolf is off today, and former Diamondbacks pitcher Josh Colemanter is filling in for Wolf. And the number one story in Major League Baseball this morning is a simple quote from Madison Bumgarner, new Diamondbacks ace, in which he says, "Oh boy, this is ruining my alias," as The Athletic somewhat confronted him with a picture of him and his rodeo partner holding an envelope of cash that they had just won in a rodeo. Our own Madison Bumgarner goes to Wickenburg and other places to rodeo. And we've got a beef here on the Doug and Wolf Show because I consider it every listener's job to be a source on the show. And we've had plenty of people send us emails and stuff. Hey, Steve Kimes at Stake 44, and he's got so-and-so with him. Oh, okay, great, thanks. And we get the guys at the airport, Josh, best sources in the world, almost as good as every equipment manager on any sports team. But then, number three, where are our Wickenburg listeners sending us emails that you saw Madison Bumgarner roping? Now, this is a major letdown for me.
Yeah, I mean, especially it's been out there for 3 months. He signs 2 weeks after that. So you'd think, oh, I just saw him out there. Maybe he's coming to Arizona. That could have been a hint or something. But, yeah, sure enough, now it's a national story. That's one of the ones that's not going to go away for a while. And just people are going to be talking about that in any type of group, even if you're not a huge baseball fan or something, that you're going to be talking about, or if you don't follow the Diamondbacks, yes, just because it's so interesting to have someone at the peak of their talent and in their respective sport to be doing a completely different sport at the same time.
And this is there's two ways to look at this. Number one, it's totally mad bum for him to be doing this. You've heard the stories, North Carolina guy, bus breaks down for the Giants, he gets out and fixes the bus keeps going. Different things like that. He's total country, totally strong with it, and yet this is also a total violation of his contract. There's language in the contract that you cannot do, in every contract, not just mad bums, that you cannot do dangerous, what they consider to be dangerous type of events. And doing competitive rodeo is totally in violation of the contract. And yet, what I'm dying to know is, how does Mike Hazen feel about knowing this? Did he already know it? And where does it go from here? Because if he knew he was in violation of the contract and that didn't stop him, do you really think Mike Hazen saying, please stop, is going to stop it?
That's true. And he doesn't seem like one that is going to let something like that, or a little sentence somewhere in a clause somewhere on the back page of a contract, mm-hmm, deter him from, you know, what he's described as not just a hobby, but be a part of who he is now. And, you know, that just seems like he's always done things the way he has done them.
Yeah.
Regardless of what people think of him, you know, obviously chiding people if they don't run around the bases for a home run, things like that, that, you know, is just part of who he is and who he thinks baseball and how he thinks baseball should be played. So I can't imagine that's going to stop. But the big thing is, knowing he has that background, is there any talks like that when you ink him to a contract? And that's probably the big question people are wondering.
Because that would, I would assume it'd be the GM's job to know that he's doing that. Yet at the same time, I didn't know. Here's Matt Bum last week talking about his bullpen session when he almost plunked David Peralta.
You know, I know it's not going to be midseason for him, first time out there, but I would like for it to be, so it's always disappointing.
First of all, every time Mad Bum speaks, I'm happy. The only thing better is when Ed Orgeron talks, the LSU head coach. That's it. That's the only voice I like better than Mad Bum's. But he's already had a big dirt bike accident and gotten hurt on it. And I admit, this is not the cheesy talk show host opinion. It's just how I feel. It does bother me from what I consider to be the selfish standpoint. You signed the contract. The front office has stuck their neck out for you. They gave you that extra fifth year. You're a guy that had great home splits, but your road splits look like you might be an aging pitcher, and now you're out doing rodeo. So I do say it's selfish, but I also love Mad Bum, and I think it's who he is. But what's the truth in a clubhouse? When you guys in a clubhouse would find out somebody's doing this on the side, is it something where somebody walks up on a Mad Bum and says, hey, that's not acceptable here? Or would everybody else in a clubhouse be, you've won Game 7 of a World Series, do what you want?
Maybe a little bit of that. This is kind of different because if at any other point it would be somebody that's, you know, maybe playing basketball or you know, something like that. That seems to be the more common one. With a couple instances, obviously Aaron Boone infamously getting hurt doing that. So it's curious to see because he's kind of a veteran presence. Obviously what he's done, his reputation speaks for itself. So who is going to be the person that says, like, hey, maybe do that when you're done playing. You can focus on this right now. And it is different because, like you said, it's exactly who he is. And he does the stuff that he's always been doing. He's grown up doing that. And it seems like it's been a part of his life all through baseball. Now, whether or not it was at like a professional rodeo where you could win some money, or if it was just on his, you know, ranch back in North Carolina just practicing. Obviously, he doesn't just roll out of bed and knows how to do it. So he's doing it one way or the other, and it just happens to be in the public eye now.
The article in The Athletic says that he has roped a fake bull in Scottsdale at Fashion Square Mall. He has roped patio furniture of former teammate Jeremy Offelt before. And just this is, I mean, you talk about as common as it gets. So now, how much further should he go? I mean, I'm waiting to see what kind of clubhouse antics will take place. Will there be the roping of Robbie Ray? Will you rope a rookie? I mean, how far will the guys take? I hope they have a lot of fun with this. They got to be all over him.
I hope so, too. And there's one person in there that it's probably near and dear to his heart, and that's Andrew Chafin, because they could have a roping competition, because Andrew Chafin even roped me at the dinner on the diamond when they were going with the country. Everyone's in the country outfits.
About that story.
So I was running around letting him rope me. So I know they've already talked, but those two are kind of peas in a pod. And I'm sure Chafin is wondering, all right, now what do I get to go ride and rope?
And once Chafin lost Zach Godley, he has needed that soulmate in the clubhouse.
That's very true. And they kind of have similar backgrounds. Like Chafin has, I think, a spread back in Ohio. And he's kind of the same thing. He could fix anything. He didn't fix the bus, but I know he fixed the ice machine in AA. That was a story we heard when he came up. So uniquely talented both of those guys are.
And plus, we're not talking about Madison Bumgarner, if you didn't know. We're talking about Mason Saunders, in which he knows he should be doing it, or wanted to keep just a little bit of a profile against everybody, making it obviously for him to be figured out, in which Mason is just kind of short, he said, for Bumgarner, and Saunders is the maiden name of his wife, Allie. So he's one of the few men in the world that has changed their name, although not legally, to their wife's name in order to rodeo.
Oh, good for him, though, because it sounds like a cowboy name. Mason Saunders sounds like a guy you could see on the PBR. But the only thing is, you change the name, but he looks exactly the same.
I know. He didn't
I feel like
do
we've seen
different.
That outfit before, him in kind of like a plaid button-down and jeans. I feel like that's just his everyday look.
You would think he would change up the way he looks. But now the one part of where there is hypocrisy here is when he got hurt on the dirt bike, he did rip himself saying how stupid it was for him to do it. And I'm wondering, was he really being honest when he said that, or was he actually being over the top honest, but he didn't mean riding the dirt bike was stupid, falling or getting hurt on the dirt bike? Because, you know, most of the guys that do that, they only think it's stupid that they got hurt. They don't think it's stupid that they were riding because they believe in their abilities. There's no way he thinks I'm going to get hurt rodeoing because he says, I've done it all my life.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's almost the same thing. Like, people who are doing something wrong don't think it's wrong until they get caught.
Yeah,
they can get around.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. Like, I'll go out and do this, and it's not going to matter because I've done it 100 times, and nothing's going to happen. And then all of a sudden, that one freak time, whatever happened on the dirt bike, and now you're sitting there having to answer questions as to what happened, why were you doing it, it's stupid. And he's like, yeah, I know, because I should have. He probably thinks that, oh, I should have avoided this or been able to stay up on the bike, as opposed to other people thinking, oh, you probably shouldn't have just gone out there at all.
This is something I should know, and I don't. Maloney, when is the first time we have... Maloney's not listening to me. Hi. When is the first time that we have the front office interviews with Mike Hazen and the front office? Do you know when that starts? I'm assuming it's not this Wednesday, so it's probably in 2 weeks, something like that. But we're going to have to get to the bottom of this sooner than that, because I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait until mid-March before we have.
I have not been told yet.
Okay. Well, I don't want to wait till mid-March to be able to ask the guys this question of what they know. You know, the standard Capitol Hill question. What did they know and when did they know it when it comes to Madison Bumgarner's rodeo abilities? We'll get the latest on our own station on when we're going to have that, and then try to get to the bottom of it, because this is going to be a big deal for the rest of the day. And when the guys start filing in for spring training today, because what time did you get to practice? You were there about 6:30, 7?
Yeah, you're usually there between 6 and 6:30 most of the time.
So that means they're getting in there now, and it'll be a while before they talk to the media. But we'll try to get the latest on Madison Bumgarner's double life coming up next. Are you kidding? DeAndre Ayton, after all this time, still needs somebody to get him fired up. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Riding on a horse.
Ha!
You can whip your Porsche off.
Josh Coltmaner is filling in for Wolf today. Paul Calvisi is filling in for Paul today.
Josh, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Good
we
to
have
see
one,
you as always.
We have one question and one question only.
Okay.
Do you use an alias to compete on the Bassmasters circuit? Like, do you use, like, you know, the nickname that we put on you and aren't real proud of years ago, but did get adopted by Gibby Ball?
We have the Ferris wheel. Josh Coltmaner going tomorrow.
Now, do you use the Ferris wheel to compete in any other sports out there, any other circuits perhaps?
Bassmasters is perfect, because that could be used to describe my signature cast.
Oh,
yeah, just there you round go. And round like a Ferris wheel.
That's right. Come right over the top. That's right. The mechanics of the cast are much like your fastball. I like that.
That's exactly right.
So you could fool the fish, so they're not as ready. DeAndre Ayton was amazing, just absolutely amazing on Saturday. Pretty lazy on Friday, amazing on Saturday against the Chicago Bulls. And normally we would not be spending a beautiful part of the program talking about Suns basketball 3 days basically after it happened. But there's something that you have to know about. Here's Monty Williams after the game.
I thought the difference was D.A., his dominance on both ends, scoring around the basket and guarding at the rim tonight, guarding in one-on-one situations after a switch. And, you know, if you get 28 and 19 boards, that's a monster night. And I told him, you know, we need him to play with that kind of disposition every night.
It was funny because as I was watching the game, I was immediately thinking of today's show and wondering, okay, how are we going to talk about it? Because all of my notes for the first, I don't know, 15, 16 minutes of the game are just ripping Ayton. Just, I mean, like, what are you doing? And then something happened in this game.
I think where it got me was I got blocked. Dude blocked my dunk. I think it was Gafford. Gafford blocked me. And that's when I was like, I never been. Nobody never blocked my dunk. So, yeah.
So we finally get DeAndre Ayton trying to dunk, which seems like his first dunk of the year in the low post. And he gets it blocked. And then he actually admits something. This is why you got to love DeAndre Ayton and why he's got to drive you crazy. He actually admits that he shouldn't be motivated by stuff like that.
Yeah, that woke me up. I was like, okay, these dudes competing. They came to play. It shouldn't be like that to where somebody have to throw the first punch at me, but yeah, it be like that sometimes. And my team woke me up. Like, always, Coach got on me. Coach Bryant got on me, and yeah, I answered.
Oh, boy.
So when okay. You realize now yep. This guy's competing against me, now I'm going to be what I can be. They're all competing against you, DeAndre. Is it that hard to figure this out?
So is that an epiphany and he's going to change his ways going forward, or is that a revelation that he's not a self-starter?
I'm scared to death it's the latter. Because we've had enough proof that he had time to figure out, hey, I'm not a very competitive guy all the time. I need to change. And he's still discovering while people are competing against
me. If you need to get faced, embarrassed out there on the floor for everyone to see, to all of a sudden get into your game and get that nasty disposition mm-hmm. that Monty Williams speaks of, if that's what it takes, well, that's a real concern, because that's not going to happen every single night on an 82-game season. You got to bring that from within. I mean, I hate to go all Ron Wolfley around here, but you got to be that self-starter, and unless you are. And you know what? Here's the thing. When you go out with the 19 rebounds and you protect the rim, that's something you can do every night.
Yes,
your shot's not going to fall every night. You're not going to have the offensive floor or the rhythm every single night. But guess what? The team you're playing tonight, Rudy Gobert, that's what he does every night.
Yes.
Goes out there. He's nasty. He protects the rim. He makes people think twice about going into the paint. That can be DeAndre Ayton every single game.
Josh, I don't know how you are about this, because people like Paul and I, the high school, you know, Harrys of the room, are the idea of a professional athlete not understanding the gifts you've been given and everything that you can accomplish. And with you, it's a little different, because you are the star of Homer. You know, there's nobody else in Michigan there's no one in Homer, Michigan that's ever been as good of a pitcher as you. But there had to be a point pretty quickly in your professional career where it was, holy crap, these guys are really good. You're fighting for your life every time you're out there. What's it like to be in a clubhouse when you know somebody in that room is so dripping with talent and yet they don't have the competitive fire? Does it drive you as crazy as it does high school Harrys like us?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't really speak to anybody in the clubhouse, but just talking baseball all across anywhere I've been, everyone knows four or five guys that were like that. They either heard about that coming up in high school, was like, hey, make sure you don't follow in so-and-so's footsteps.
Yep.
Everyone had like a high school kid that stories got told about that had all the talent. Or then you get to the minor leagues or even college, and guys just try to ride on their talent or just show up and they think it's going to happen. And that works for a while, and then at some point it doesn't. And so this is the peak of the NBA. So it
yes.
could have taken him through, and in college maybe he just rode the talent. But now, I mean, he should know the guys he's going against. You watch the games. He's probably watched the game since he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden you're facing X, Y, and Z player. Like, yeah. So maybe just have someone block him in warm-ups. Get him going that way.
That's a great layup line shot. He went for 28 points and 19 boards. And once he flipped the switch, I mean, he was absolutely unstoppable. And just to listen to that again, it is such a scary statement that he's making, where he's such a good dude. And too many people, when we talk about DeAndre Ayton, you get confused between the professional and the human being. The human being is such a good dude. We always argue, why aren't people more honest? You're not going to get somebody more honest than DeAndre Ayton, who actually says and admits, it shouldn't be this way, but I needed that.
Yeah, that woke me up. I was like, okay, these dudes competing, they came to play. It shouldn't be like that to where somebody have to throw the first punch at me, but yeah, it'd be like that sometimes.
And if this was game one or two or even year one of his career, I would still be frustrated, but at least I'd back off a little bit. We are now almost finished with the second year of your career, and you're still shocked with the line, wow, these guys are competing. It's the NBA!
That's why the alarm bells are going off right now. If he's just only realizing this at this point. On the other hand, Doug, he's not been playing basketball very long, and he's still 21.
That's true.
He started playing
when he was 14.
Okay, so to what degree, and I don't say this very often because you are a professional, but you're also a very young man who hasn't been playing the game very long. To what degree is this also on the coaching staff to get it out of him on a nightly basis? There's like 8 NBA assistants. We have no idea what all these guys do. Somebody, Mark Bryan in particular, is the big man coach. They need to be responsible for getting this out of him, getting him into that mode, that nasty disposition we saw. Whether it's, to Josh's point, you put the video clip on a tablet and you show it to him on the bench every single game to try and motivate him. But to some degree, if I'm Robert Sarver and James Jones, this falls on the coaching staff. It's incumbent upon you to get that out of him every single night. Figure it out. But that has to be the sort of player we get on a more regular basis.
I don't look at the coaching staff per se, because can the coaching staff make an uncompetitive person competitive? I don't know.
It's
how
like,
you
can
do
you make an inaccurate quarterback accurate?
Yeah, exactly.
I get it, and it's to his DNA. But if it's there, it's the coach's job to get it out of him to a greater degree. Mm. And that's where I think we're going to find out a lot. And I hate to say it, Monty Williams, Mark Bryan, and company.
Josh, how many times have you seen a guy that is not competitive develop? I mean, that to me is bred. That's in you. Have you seen guys become more competitive, have more fire as they've gone through their career?
A little bit, but a lot of times it comes on the tails of maybe like a block, but just kind of getting something handed to them, where like they go out there and just, in baseball terms, four runs all of a sudden in the first inning, and now all of a sudden they come out in the second inning and their demeanor's completely changed. Sometimes it takes a wake-up call like that to get something going that's not naturally there from the get-go, where other guys from the jump, that's the exact mentality they have. Some guys, it takes getting punched in the face to wake up. Like football players say, like, oh, once you finally get hit, you're ready to go.
Yeah.
And some guys need that, whereas other guys are built like that. So you can, I don't know, but it's not really like coachable.
Yeah,
like
that's hard. That's
to
how I feel.
And try I'm to scared. Figure out what you're going to do to get that going from the jump, unless he has to learn.
And a lot of people will say it's because he's young or because he's big. Zion's young and Zion's big. Does anybody say, boy, Zion's not a very competitive person?
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't buy the big man disease.
Here's the thing, though. This coaching staff, I think, will be held accountable and ultimately culpable if that doesn't come out of DeAndre Ayton on a more regular basis a year or two from now. You watch.
Oh, that's fair.
They will be held culpable for that.
That is true about any coaching staff. I agree with you there. Coming up next, the Robbie Ray outing is typical Robbie Ray. So I don't mean to talk about something in February as a warning sign, but is there a warning sign? That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. I would say it's a pretty funny way to start off your season, but Robbie Ray admitted that he's surprised he's a Diamondback. That's not normally the way somebody starts the season. Good morning. It's Doug and Wolf on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Josh Colemanter, former Diamondbacks pitcher, is filling in for Wolf today. And he just readily admits, either at the trade deadline or in this offseason, he assumed he'd be moved. And I think both sides are kind of staring at each other to say, are you a long-term answer for the Arizona Diamondbacks or not? And I don't know which way that's going to go, because if he doesn't pitch well this year, I don't think the Diamondbacks will want him. And if he does pitch well this year, I think he'll price himself out of being an Arizona Diamondback. So I assume this is his last year. But what's kind of funny about it is just how simple he openly admitted, I'm surprised I'm here.
Yeah, the last time I was in here was the trade deadline. And up until that point, everyone thought that he was gone. That was a foregone conclusion. And then to stay, and you heard a little bit this offseason and nothing happened. And obviously, what arm talent he has, and being left-handed, that doesn't come around all the time. And it's flashes when he puts it together, he's unbelievable. And, you know, a couple of years ago, that season he had, and even just the strikeout numbers, and obviously that's huge in terms of how people evaluate people now, is being able to have swing and miss stuff. But, I think this is, you know, kind of like the last audition. All right, what are we going to get out of him this year? And then, you know, depending on that, I think the team makes the decision.
I think most of you remember, but in case you don't, just to show you what Robbie Ray can do, remember how upset all of us were in the wild card playoff game when Greinke didn't have it. and we all thought now we're going to lose to the Dodgers because we had to bring Robbie Ray. We didn't want to have to lose Robbie Ray in that game. Now, it was 100% the right decision to bring Robbie Ray in. You had to get out of that. You had to win that game before you ever had a chance to do anything, or you're even out in that round. But that's how elevated we had Robbie Ray status during that year. Well, Robbie Ray in this game did not pitch well in the second inning. First inning, 3 strikeouts, and he's done. So he strikes out the side. Second inning, he comes in, gets 2 outs, walks 2 batters, gets pulled. And when I say gets pulled, on the one hand, okay, it's not the first time in the history of spring training somebody gets pulled. But you know full well as a starting pitcher, the expectation is in your first outing, give me 2 innings and we'll yank you. And then whenever you don't get through your 2 innings, it's like, okay, you shouldn't have wasted those pitches. Life goes on. But when it's Robbie Ray, and that's been the problem the whole time, everyone's going to act like, okay, it's not that big of a deal. But I think they were hoping for the alternative of Robbie Ray pitching 2 clean innings.
Yeah, I think you're finally looking to, when can we just get off that narrative completely?
Yes.
And not have to worry about that. And that's kind of been an issue his entire career, is the pitch count, especially in a day when pitch count dominates decision-making for a manager and for a team. You know, to be efficient and economical, and that's something he's always struggled with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, guys that strike out a lot of people have higher pitch counts, but then it's also the walks, 3-2 counts, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, coaches will say 2 out walks and lead off walks kill you. So seeing, you know, 2 quick outs and then 2 walks, a lot of times that just tends to be focus or something like that, as opposed to, you know, just a physical or mechanical problem.
Now, just to fill you in on what it's like being a talk show host, I struggle with my opinion on Robbie Ray because of how bad of an opinion I had on somebody else in the Diamondbacks organization that you'll know full well. I was totally in favor of the Ian Kennedy trade. Loved the Ian Kennedy trade because my opinion was, I don't like repeating it, Max Scherzer's a closer. That Max Scherzer was the same way. Remember how he would have these 100-pitch, 4 2/3 inning outings because he struck out everybody, but at the same time, his pitch counts were so outrageous that I thought, just make the guy a closer. He's clearly a guy that's going to be able to overpower everybody, but he's never going to be able to pitch 7-8 innings consistently because of his pitch counts. Well, okay, I missed on that. So now I look at Robbie Ray, and I'm scared to death of going down that same train of his pitch counts are too crazy to count on him for 7 and 8 innings, and I feel like we have enough data that I'm right, and yet you know full well if somebody unlocks Robbie Ray, I don't want to say Hall of Fame stuff, but the stuff is so good, who knows what this guy can do if he's able to get his pitch count down.
That's exactly right. I mean, and it's not like he gets – worse as the game goes on or anything, and the stuff stays the same the whole time.
It's just
a matter of being able to get to that, you know, 7-8 inning level, which is, you know, where they want him, especially for how high he'll be in the rotation. But obviously he has the stuff to be in the bullpen, and you see what Kennedy's finally doing now, having success in the bullpen. But just the fact that you could get that for 7 innings keeps him there as opposed to putting him in the bullpen where he would probably be unbelievable. Just the stuff that he has coming out and throwing, you know, 1 inning or 1 plus innings, but just the fact
that I know
that
the analytic guys are yelling at me right now to even bring that up.
Yeah, exactly.
They're losing their mind.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, once a guy really struggles as a starter, and that usually happens in the minor leagues, all right, let's throw him in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing about the bullpen is, like, as a starter, you can always go to the bullpen. Once you're in the bullpen, you usually don't go back. It's usually a one-way street.
Yes.
And not a revolving door. And just the fact that you can get him for 7 innings keeps him there, and you're hoping that now he starts figuring out how to get to that point more often than not.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Coming up tonight, you heard Paul mention it with Rudy Gobert. We'll see what DeAndre Ayton brings to the table. The Suns are taking on the Utah Jazz tonight. That game will be right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock. I don't know if it was A's fans, I don't know if it was just general fans of the Cactus League, or those of you that love baseball in the Valley that wanted to stand up for it.
Everyone's going to have a comment, but like I said, not worried about that. I'm worried about playing baseball and pitching for this team.
That's Mike Fiers after his outing with the Oakland A's in the Cactus League, and he received several ovations from the fans at the game.
That was the comment of, how do you feel about the David Ortizes of the world saying that you're a snitch and you shouldn't have said anything? But what about the support from the fans?
Oakland's going to support us no matter what. I mean, they've always been there. I mean, it's fun. It's fun playing, you know, in front of these fans and with these guys on the field. So just a great day of baseball, and, you know, we're having fun.
Where are you, Josh, on the line of what happens in a clubhouse stays in a clubhouse, but at the same time, my own personal opinion is this man made baseball better by getting this out there. How do you feel about Mike Fiers?
Well, it's interesting. That was my first thought was, oh boy, why did he come out and say something like that? Especially mm-hmm. when it led to him being on a World Series winning team.
Yeah.
And we were talking a little bit earlier, it could be, you know, if he's in the National League East and he plays the Astros once every 3 years, but he's directly, you know, in the same division. So mm-hmm. he's going to get the results of knowing what they're doing and facing them. And when you're in a battle for the playoffs, like they have been with the Astros the last couple yes. of years, you don't want that team having an edge that you know. And, you know, it takes a lot of courage to come out and say that. And I think now everything's shifting, not from him, people being mad at him. It's now baseball's handling of it. And it seems like every time the commissioner says something or anyone says it just gets mishandled. And they're just stepping on
That's
their own
the
toes. They can't get out
talking.
Of their own way. Yeah.
Because I admit when the punishment first came out and I learned all the Astros were doing, I didn't like it. It bothered me. I didn't think the punishment was harsh enough, but I wasn't, you know, just rip-roaring mad about it until the Astros apology. It was the Astros' horrible apologies that I think sent everybody over the rails and like, wait a minute, you guys don't get it at all, do you? And that's where everything's built up. And I think now everybody supports Mike Fiers.
I think so, too. And just the fact that now all 30 teams have their guys in front of microphones every day. You know, you heard some people say stuff when it first came out, mm-hmm. some of the, you know, top stars or people directly influenced by that, or particularly the Dodgers. You heard a lot from
yep.
that. But now everybody can talk about it. And now just seeing their apologies, how the commissioner's and I think people can now speak out. And I think almost everybody had the same reaction when the penalty came out. That does nothing, really.
Yes,
to
yes.
And I think baseball just thought, hey, we can sweep this under the rug, get us to the season, we'll focus on something else. But the players, as we found out, aren't going to let that
That's
you know,
a good
happen
thing.
That way.
I think the rule is when Mike Trout talks about it, now you know you've got a problem. You can't get Mike Trout to talk about anything. And now when Mike Trout has Nick Markakis, and I think everybody over there deserves a beating, and Nick Markakis never talks about anything. And now that is, I applaud the players. I'm glad they're saying something. However, would they support their own union turning their back on the Astros guys? I mean, they can talk like this, but, you know, that's blasphemy if the union didn't stand up for them in the way a union operates. And yet if so many players, if the rank and file want the Astros to be punished much more severely, is the union going to listen to the rank and file, or are they going to think, no, we've got a higher calling, we should ignore the wants of 2,000 players to support 30 of them?
Yeah, that's what's tough when it comes to the union, but that almost falls on the commissioner. Like, he should have been able to set a precedent.
Exactly.
So this never happens again. And unless you actually punish the players, affect the product on the field, for the Astros are going to go in with a complete lineup. They're going to be a favorite to get to the you know, the playoffs and the World Series again.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't really affect the team at all. Yeah, they lost the manager and GM, but those people are going to be replaced in a few years anyway.
Yeah.
So they just do it now, but the talent stays the same. And I think that was a chance that they could have come out, set a precedent. Because you saw that with steroids. The players' union just got so fed up with some people being able to get around it or mm-hmm. under it or over it. They're like, just make the penalties so severe that no one does it. Just
yeah.
to completely eliminate it. And that's a chance that they could have done that with this. Set a precedent that no one would ever try to do anything like this again, because they're going to get half a season suspension
totally
or 100
agree.
Games or whatever. And now that the commissioner can't really walk it back, and every time he speaks, he kind of stumbles a little mm-hmm. bit and just creates a couple more days of people talking about it. And obviously seeing now how upset all the other players are, you know, maybe you should have got that pulse before you handed out punishments or everything happened.
Totally agree. Coming up next, after re-signing DJ Humphries, there's a new name in a mock draft that might show something no one's thought of. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.